All right, good to see you. I'm going to ask right now if you take your Bibles and go to Daniel chapter 3. If you were here this morning, you know, a pastor asked me what I was going to do tonight, and I said I don't want to tell him. That may sound a little bit strange, but once I tell you what we're going to do, it scares people. But no reason to be scared. We're going to be a Bible translation committee tonight. We're going to do exactly what a Bible translation committee does and have the experience of doing it. We're in Daniel chapter 3, and you remember, as these evenings, we've been telling you why I have confidence in the King James Bible. Okay? It's based on the right text. It's translated by the right men. It's translated with the right method. It's translated based on the right doctrine, and it has the right history. Now, and this is important for us to understand this and to get this, it really does matter who translates the Bible. We're going to illustrate that. One of the keys in Bible translation, why you want to have people of good doctrine, as we mentioned last night, that Hebrew, Old Testament, Greek, the New Testament, English, the language we use, are all polysemic languages. That means words can have more than one meaning. The Russian comedian Yakov Smirnov has a whole two-hour comedy routine about how difficult it is to learn English if you're Russian, because Russian is not polysemic. Every Russian word only has one meaning. Gives you this the meaning. But in English, you look at a dictionary. It'll give you meaning number one, meaning number two, meaning number three, meaning number four. Well, this is a huge challenge in Bible translation and Bible interpretation. What meaning of the word are we using? And the context will tell you. Well, Smirnov said when he first came to the United States from Russia, he bought his first automobile. And he was driving his first automobile off the lot, and a light came on, and the light said, "The door is ajar." And he looked at that. He thought that was the funniest thing he had ever seen, because his English wasn't that good, but he knew what the word door meant, and he knew what ajar was. And one thing he was sure is the door was not ajar. Well, all the way through the Bible, in translation, involves decision making. And you'll make decisions based on your beliefs. And the context will tell you. You remember we talked about that last night, Hosea 3:1. We're in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 1. There is a word, it's very common in the Bible, called Elohim, that can have three possible meanings, and the context will tell you what the right one is. It's the word Elohim. Elohim can mean human judges. Or it can mean gods, reference to the pagan gods. Or it can mean God, the true God. It's the same word. That may sound funny, but it's the same word. And they knew how it was used, told them how the word should be translated into English. Context would tell you. Sometimes it meant human judges. Sometimes it meant pagan gods, and sometimes it meant the true God. So I'm making you a translation committee tonight. This word shows up several times in Daniel chapter 3. And when I get to that word, I'm not going to read the English translation. I'm going to read the word Elohim. We get to the end of the sentence, I'm going to have you tell me. Now, translation committees would have to get together and agree. Have you tell me, should this be judges, gods, or God? Okay? So you're actually going to be the Bible translation committee tonight. I've done this often. I did this Wednesday night, and there were three people in the audience who'd actually been on a translation committee, translated the Bible into Indonesian. So they'd done this lots and lots of times. But tonight, you're the Bible translation committee. You get to decide. We're in Daniel chapter 3. You know the story. It's a very famous Sunday school story. And Nebuchadnezzar has built a golden image. Nebuchadnezzar has conquered all the region around Babylon. They've taken young men and brought them to Babylon. They picked the brightest, smartest, most accomplished young men they could find. They brought them to Babylon to create a new class of government workers, loyal not to their home countries, but to Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. And so now he's built a golden image. Secular history tells us about his golden image, says it made it to look like him. He wants all these young men, when they hear the music, to bow to this image, thus giving homage to Nebuchadnezzar's gods, his religion, his way, and even him personally. And so here you are, thousands of young men from many countries. Out of all those countries, only one of them that didn't worship multiple gods. They might worship three gods or 10 gods or 100 gods or 1,000 gods. And Nebuchadnezzar is saying, when you hear the music, you bow down and worship my gods. You worship me. Or you get cast in a burning fiery furnace. If you already have 100 gods, and you get threatened like that, you need to add another one, what do you do? Yeah, what's the big deal between 100 and 101? If you have 1,000 gods, I've been to Trinidad where they worship many gods, and it's customary to put a flag in your yard for each god you worship. And I've seen yards with no flags, or yards with one flag, or with 3, or 10, or 100. And went to a store in the mall looking for a souvenir for the family, and I'm just walking down the mall, and there's a god store. You buy gods. Little, bitty, plastic gods, real cheap. Or bigger gods of plastic and wood, a little more money. Gods of tin, gods of brass. If you were ready to spend a lot of money, you could buy gods of gold and silver. They said they had 2,000 gods in that store. I'm just walking around looking, you know, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And young lady, sales lady, comes up to me, looked like she's 18, 19, 20, maybe, and walked up and said, "Sir, can I help you pick a god?" Nobody ever asked me that before. And when she asked me, I said, "You know, I know exactly what god I'm looking for." And I said, "You know, I'm on my way to the airport to go to Chicago." She said, "It's not a problem, we can ship it. Whatever you want, if you can't take it." I said, "Yeah, I'm wanting the god that doesn't need my help to get back to Chicago." I said, "I want to buy the god that'll be in Chicago waiting for me, that doesn't need my help to get there." And she stuttered for a minute. She said, "Sir, I don't think we have a god like that." I said, "I don't think you do either. But they said they had 2,000 gods." Well, if you got 2,000 gods and somebody threatens you about adding one more, what do you do? You just add one more. It's not a big deal. Out of this whole group of people, there's only one segment that has a problem. And that's the Jews. They believed in one God, and in their Ten Commandments, they were commanded not to have any other God. Music plays. Thousands of Jewish young men bow. I'm sure they didn't want to. I imagine most of them were saying, "Lord, forgive me. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I'm sorry. Please forgive me." But they didn't want to get tossed in a burning fiery furnace either. Secular history also tells us about Nebuchadnezzar's burning fiery furnace. He dug a pit. They put rock that radiated heat all over the bottom of the pit, all around the walls. They would put material in it that burnt, start a fire, and they'd throw you in the pit, and the rocks would radiate the heat. And this is horrible, but it's a natural human reflex that when you've got something hot, you pull back. So somebody'd take a step, and then they'd try to jump away, but they'd just land somewhere else just as hot, and then they'd jump again, and they would literally roast while jumping until they died. Play the music. Folks bow. Except among the Jewish young men, there are three that do not bow: Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. People have wondered where Daniel was. By now, Daniel is high in the government. He's probably off on business somewhere. And we'll pick up. That's where we pick up in the story. Some of the folks come to see him. Verse 12, Nebuchadnezzar. "There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy Elohim, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Elohim. They're judges, gods, or God? Gods. It's the gods of Babylon. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. secular history also says about Nebuchadnezzar, anytime he lost his temper, people died. And they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my Elohim, nor worship the golden image which I have set up?" Gods. Y'all aren't cheating looking in the King James there, are you? Okay, just hang on now. "Now, if ye be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that Elohim that shall deliver you out of my hands?" God. Says there's some God out there bigger than you think than all my gods? Some Elohim out there bigger than all my Elohim? "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our Elohim, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king." God. They're talking about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. See, you're functioning right now as a Bible translation committee. You're making the decision about how to translate a word. Now, translation committee is a lot of work because you got to make that decision about every word. But that's what you're doing. And there you are. Hey. By the way, it's another subject. But think about the bravery these men were demonstrating. Because they didn't know if God was going to deliver them or not. You look throughout the Bible, you look throughout church history. Sometimes God delivers his people when they're threatened. And sometimes he doesn't. If he delivered you every time, it'd be fun to get thrown in a burning fire furnace. If you knew you couldn't burn, you'd be getting in line to be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. What an experience. They did not know whether God was going to deliver them or not. They knew they were going to be faithful to God, whether he did or not. That's another message. Verse 18. "But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, we will not serve thy Elohim, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Gods, yeah. It's obviously the pagan gods. "Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake, commanded they should heat the furnace one 7 times more than it was wont to be heated." He's angry. He said, you know how much stuff you normally throw in there for the fire? I want 7 times as much. So now there's not just a fire. That fire is roaring, and the flames are coming up out of the top of the pit. "Commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, cast them in a burning fire furnace." He sends his best soldiers. Get Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, take their clothes, tie them up in their clothes, walk them over to the pit to throw them in the fire. And these men were bound in their coats, their hosen and their hats and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fire furnace. "Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the fire exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." I mean, the fire is so high and so hot, the soldiers that walk them over to the edge are killed by the flames. Okay. Only casualties in this story, by the way. Verse 22. Verse 23. "And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fire furnace." Got the crowds there watching. One is going to see what's going to happen. Not going to take long for these men to die. The fire is so high. They walked over to the edge. They're thrown in. There's a crowd there waiting to see them roast. Not going to take as long as it normally does. But verse 24. "Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, Did not we cast 3 men bound in the midst of the fire?" They answered and said unto the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire. And they have no hurt. I mean, they're looking in the fire, wondering if they can see past the flames to the charred remains of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Not only are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego not burnt, they're walking around. Not only are they walking around, they're not alone. Somebody else is walking around with them. What a moment. I'm just now old enough. I don't know about you, Brother White, but I'm just now old enough. I see the friends of my youth, and I understand what I've heard for years, that when you get older and you see folks from when you were young and you're telling all your stories from your childhood, the stories kind of get a little bigger and grow over the years. How would you grow this story? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego see each other 50 years later. They're not kids in their 20s anymore. They're now in their 70s, and they see each other. And you remember when Nebuchadnezzar threw us in the fire? And Jesus came and walked with us. How do you make that story any bigger than it was in real life? The form of the fourth is like the son of Elohim. You think? You don't think that was where he was thought the one that, oh yeah, he looks like a son of a human judge? You don't think that was likely? You don't think he looked like a son of the gods? You think Nebuchadnezzar knew that the God of heaven just won this battle? And so I ask you why almost every English Bible says a son of the gods right there. The New King James does not make that mistake, but the RSV does. New American Standard does. The ESV does. The NIV does. The Jehovah's Witness Bible does. Why would it say a son of the gods? That's obviously a really stupid translation right there. Well, let's take, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the basic doctrines of the Jehovah's Witnesses is that Jesus was not God. Okay? He was born. He did not exist before he's born in Matthew chapter 1. What happens to the Jehovah's Witnesses if they admit that Jesus was there on this occasion, walking in the fire with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? What does that do to Jehovah's Witness theology? People would be sitting in the Kingdom Hall reading that. So wait a minute. Everything you've been teaching me is wrong. Jesus didn't start in Matthew. Jesus is right here. In Daniel 3, they would be giving people Bibles that destroyed their religion. So you know why the Jehovah's Witnesses use a bad translation? They destroy their religion if they don't. Y'all ready? Why all those other Bibles? Because in part or whole, all of those translation committees had modernists on it who didn't believe Jesus was God. And what would happen if they translated Daniel 3:25 right? They would destroy their religion. And yet, it's obvious that's the only reasonable, rational translation there. Calling it a son of the gods is absolute nonsense. Now, I know someone said, well, there's no way Nebuchadnezzar could have known about the son of God. Really? In Psalm 2, kiss the son lest he be angry. It's directed to the kings of the world. You don't suppose Daniel might have got around to mentioning that sometime or another. Proverbs chapter 30 asks the question, what is God's name if you know? And the whole passage is designed to humble man. What is God's name if you know? And then what is his son's name? For a son to have a name, he has to have what? A son. Or you get in Isaiah 9, and we're told about the child who is the son and the father at the same time. I'm telling you, the truth of the Trinity is known in the Old Testament. If it was known in the Old Testament, there are bound to be people that talked about it. I would imagine Daniel had talked about it. I mean, it's plain as day, and we'll see it again in a moment. Plain as day, he knows he's talking, looking at the Son of God. So why not translate it that way? Well, if you got the wrong men translating, what are they going to do? They're going to change it to fit themselves. You got it? It matters that you have the right men translating. And Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High Elohim, come forth and come hither. God has to be. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire. The princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. They didn't even smell like smoke when they came out, which is different than a few of the church members I had in Chicago. I used to tell church members that smoke, you don't lose your salvation for smoking. Your pastor loves you anyway. I'll be there for you. I'll be there for counseling. I'll be there for your weddings. I'll be there when you go to the hospital, and you'll go more often than the other folks, but I'll be there. I'll even preach your funeral for you sooner than I will the funeral of other folks. God loves you anyway. Verse 28. And Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the Elohim of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God has to be. The kids get it. I've done this exercise with a Bible translation committee composed totally of 10-year-olds. And they get it. The translators of the RSV and the ESV and the NIV don't get it. But a bunch of 10-year-olds that don't have anything to be prejudiced about get it. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel. See, he understood who the fourth person was. He was the angel that came from the Lord. By the way, all the way through the Old Testament, when Jesus appears in the Old Testament, he's called the angel of the Lord. It's happened over 30 occasions. Nebuchadnezzar gets it. And delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any Elohim except their own Elohim. First one is God, small g. And that one might have been a little tricky to figure out. But the second one, except their own Elohim, God, that's the creator God. There's no question about that one. Therefore, I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the Elohim of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? God, you got it. Shall be, you weren't cheating by looking at what's in your kingdom. Never mind. And shall be cut in pieces. Their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other Elohim that can deliver after this sort. God. Now, I've had people tell me, Brother Stringer, you make too much out of this one verse. You think I make too much out of this. You should see what Nebuchadnezzar did with it. In Babylon, as in any big city of that time, there'd be a number of different gates in and out of the city. Every big city, Jerusalem had it, every big city had what was called the dung gate. This isn't pleasant, but it's reality. Every day, wagons had to carry animal dung and human dung outside the city. They had a gate set aside just for that, because the smell would be terrible, so that other people going about other occupations did not have to be bothered by the smell. There was a gate that was just the dung gate. And according to secular history, there was a lot of pagan priests, including priests of Baal, for example, that lived in Babylon, and they tended to be the wealthiest people in Babylon. And there was actually an area where they all lived. So here's a mansion owned by one of the priests of Baal. And that priest of Baal, he just isn't going to give in to this. He's not going to admit that was the Son of God in the fire. And so he starts bad-mouthing the Lord. Next thing you know, somebody's saying, what is that smell? Now, you didn't hear? Priest so-and-so? He literally got cut in half. Because every time Nebuchadnezzar loses his temper, somebody dies. And the dung wagons aren't taking the dung out of the town, city of Babylon anymore. They're taking them to his mansion and dumping it all at his mansion. So now anybody going anywhere near his mansion, the smell is terrible. And they know the story of judgment on him because he didn't acknowledge that was the Son of God in the fire. See, the first thing I do about any translation, somebody brings me an English translation, I look at Daniel 3:25. Somebody wants me to support, and I've been very involved in supporting foreign Bible translations. Somebody wants me to support a foreign Bible translation, I go to Daniel 3:25, and I want somebody to read it to me. If it says in that Bible, in any language, a son of the gods, I know everything I need to know about the translators. But if it says the Son of God, then show me more. We're off to a good start. I had this happen because I've been involved in some of this. I'm pastoring in Chicago, and one Sunday morning, there's a man there. He never seen him before. He's from the Philippines, and we have a number of Filipinos in the church. I'm not surprised to see somebody from the Philippines there or a visitor there. After the service, he says, "Can I meet with you?" We sit down, talk. He said, "I have been translating the Bible into a language in the Philippines that does not have a good majority text translation." So we've got it all done on these discs. And he said, "I can't get any of the Bible printers to print it. I don't know what to do. Can you help me?" And first thing I do is, "Tell me what Daniel 3:25 in your Bible says." So he opens it and reads it. There it is. Son of God. Then the second thing I always do is, "Show me 1 John 5:7 and 8. Is 1 John 5:7 and 8 in your Bible?" He shows me. And then I said, "Okay, let's spend some time together." And we talk through this. We deal with it. I get some of my Filipino men in the church to read through it. And they tell me this is good. And I said, I'll try to find it for you, a publisher. And he leaves it with me. And I don't hear from him. And I call his phone number, and I don't get any answer. His phone's disconnected. I don't quite know what to do. Months later, his family gets a hold of me and says, "Brother Stringer, is it possible that you have our father's Bible?" I said, "Yeah, it's in my office." So why has he never called me back? So shortly after he left you, he got killed in an automobile accident. And we didn't know what happened to all his work. I got a hold of one of the Bible printers who trust me on these things. I said, "Look, somebody needs to print this. This guy got it right." And he printed it, and today it's being used in that province of the Philippines. It's the first thing I look at. Daniel 3:25. I got a good starting place if they translated that right. If they didn't translate that right, I don't want anything more to do with them, because even a Bible translation committee composed of 10-year-olds can get that. You all got it. Nobody in here was arguing for the wrong translation. Y'all get it? I was preaching in Key West, Florida, and the preacher asked me, he said, "I really want you to deal with this, the differences in the Bibles." And he said, "I want you to take 2 hours. And don't worry, your pastor didn't ask me to take 2 hours. We're almost done." But he said, "I want you to take 2 hours. Give them so many examples that they got to get it." So I get 30 examples. And difference between a majority text and minority text. And I look out there, and there's a couple ladies sitting in the service that really look remarkably alike. I found out later they're twins. And I said, "Just as example, here is a majority text Bible, the King James. Here's a minority text Bible, the Revised Standard Version." I said, you see the King James a lot in Baptist churches. You see the Revised Standard Version a lot in Unitarian churches, just for example. Service is over. One of the ladies came up to me and said, "I live in Minneapolis. I was just visiting my twin sister here," which is why they look so much alike. And she said, "I'm a Unitarian." She said, "And I carry a Revised Standard Version Bible. That's what I got." She said, "You're giving all those examples." So when you said the RSV, that's exactly what I have. And I thought maybe she's going to be upset and unhappy. She said, thank you. This has really been helpful. She said, I always knew my sister and I had different religions, but I did not understand why. She said, it's because we have different Bibles. She got it. She still didn't come up with the right one, but she got the why as to why they were different. You all understand this serious business. Who translates the Bible? I want a Bible where every word is accurate. I want a Bible where every word is based on the right text. I want a Bible where every word has been translated by the right men who are going to get this right and do it right. I want a Bible that's translated with the right method. I want a Bible that's translated based on the right doctrine, where the translators believe God gave every word and they're handling the words of God and they're not free to change them. They're going to answer to God for what they do with them. And I want a Bible that has the right history. This is not a little subject. It's not some tiny little divisive thing. This is a big deal. God bless y'all. Pastor.